This is the Mountain Muse, and I'm Emmy DeGrappa. And today, we are talking to April Alliston. She teaches literature and gender and sexuality studies at Princeton University. She is a recipient of a Guggenheim Fellowship and just finished a new book called Consenting Adults on Pornography, Privacy, and Freedom. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
We're really excited to hear about your new book. And can you talk to us a little bit about that? The book you just finished?
Yes. Well, I normally teach 18th century fiction, which is a far cry from internet pornography. But actually, one thing I learned during the course of researching pornography is that it was really invented in the period I study, the 18th century. But I wouldn't have gotten interested in writing about it except for the fact that it has had, pornography that is, has had a very profound effect on my personal life. As a child, I remember being deeply negatively affected by the magazines I would see around, just affected my sense of self in a kind of damaging way. But it really wasn't until I was an adult in the internet age and single that I noticed that more than one of my significant relationships was pretty much fatally damaged by internet pornography. So that's how I ended up writing a book about it. Actually, not only have I learned a lot, but it's been a healing process for me personally, too.
Oh, that's really good to hear.
That's what I hope to share in the TED Talk, too.
Oh, good.
Process.
No, I think that is really important. I was reading an article that you wrote about trolling.
Yes.
And 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
And I wanted you to tell me a little bit about that, because I didn't understand what trolling was until I was reading your article and really didn't realize how prevalent it is. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that, too.
Yes, well, trolling is, you know, like pornography, it's another one of these freedom of speech issues because, you know, in our country, we want to protect everyone's freedom to say whatever they want or to express themselves in whatever way they want. But the problem with both of these things, especially with the internet, it's really changed the game, both with, well, with a lot of freedom of speech issues, including pornography. And also trolling, which only really exists on the internet, because it's what it is that people can get online and post comments anonymously about anything, whether it's an article that you've written. In fact, a lot of people posted pretty mean comments about my article on 50 Shades of Grey. But they also will just find somebody who's, you know, suffered a tragedy or is suffering or insecure in some way, and they'll just pile on and attack a person. So that was what I was trying to sort of understand and analyze in my article on internet trolls. It was triggered by the incident in New York State, I guess it was about a year ago, where a bus monitor was attacked by a bunch of adolescent boys in person, not on the internet. But I think there's a connection. They learned from the internet that it's okay to just sort of say anything you want about a person, no matter how damaging it might be. And so they did it on the bus, and then they posted it online thinking that was normal. And this did actually cause a huge outcry. But that was the inspiration for my writing about internet trolls.
On that same subject line, how does that relate to 50 Shades of Grey?
It doesn't exactly relate directly. Those were two separate articles. But I was interested in 50 Shades of Grey because it's rather unusual in that it's pornography directed at women. It's also not visual pornography. It's a book. It's a novel, of course. But those were two different articles. I didn't really tie them together. But I do think that the freedom of speech issue is a theme that connects the two topics in kind of general way.
Okay. So is 50 Shades of Grey an article that you wrote?
50 Shades of Grey is a novel by... I'm not remembering her name right now.
Okay. That's okay, because I just got it confused, thinking that 50 Shades of Grey was one of your op-eds that you have written. But I'm just getting it confused.
I wrote an op-ed about the novel entitled 50 Shades of Grey. Yes. It was a critique of the fantasy that 50 Shades of Grey, I think, is selling to women. So on the one hand, I think it's, you know, a positive thing that finally we get some sort of erotic books that are trying to reach a female audience rather than what's usually it's for a male audience. And there's a large extent to which you could say that 50 Shades of Grey is about female pleasure. It describes this woman having orgasms a lot, which is unusual in pornography. But to focus on the woman's orgasm or pleasure, that is as unusual in pornography. So that's a kind of positive side to it. But I was pretty critical of the novel in my op-ed, which I wrote with Susan Greenfield of Fordham University. Because it's not really about enjoying bondage, discipline, and sadomasochism, which is the kind of sexual activity the book is about. It's about rather converting a man who's much more powerful from his predilection for that. And, you know, it's about the fantasy that you can change a man who's much more powerful than you are so that instead of taking advantage of you, he'll take care of you. And I think that's a rather dangerous fantasy to sell to women. So that was why I was critical of the book. And it's an old one, too. There's nothing original about it. It goes back to Jane Eyre. It goes back to Pamela. It goes back to 18th century fiction, actually.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, in your new book, Consenting Adults, on Pornography, Privacy, and Freedom, what is the central theme that you want people to take away in that book?
The central theme is that pornography eroticizes use and non-consent. It eroticizes, it makes it seem sexy to use somebody else's body for your pleasure rather than mutual pleasure. And so the point I'd like people to take away from it is that really what we need to do to prevent some of the harms that have been documented by psychologists, sociologists, and journalists that are affecting people's lives in very profound ways is to clarify, for all of us to clarify our own consent. You know, to what extent do we really consent to become users of pornography? To what extent do we really consent to have our children exposed to pornography? To what extent do we consent to participate in porn culture, which is the phrase that a lot of writers have used for the way, especially now with the internet, all the pornography that's everywhere has kind of invaded our culture more generally beyond pornography per se. So I don't think it works to censor it. In the past, people have advocated censoring pornography. And now, again, there are more calls than there have been in the past 20 years or so to censor pornography in various ways because people are becoming more aware of the harms that it produces. But I don't think that works because censorship just creates a stronger taboo that people want to break, which is what pornography is all about, breaking taboos. Also, in fact, historically, pornography only emerges when there is censorship. When you have printing presses and the censorship that came along with the printing press, that's when pornography gets invented. So I just don't think it works to censor pornography at all. It just makes more of it. So instead, I am trying to advocate that people just individually use their freedom to draw the lines of their own consent to participate in this kind of culture or not.
That's interesting, especially where do you draw the line and how do you influence your children when it's so prevalent?
That's a hard question. That is a very hard question. But, well, I think you need to talk to your children. I think one of the problems is that people don't talk about pornography enough. It's a kind of embarrassing and emotionally charged subject. And so people avoid talking about it. I think part of consent is, I make it sound easy, but actually consent is inherently a very murky and complicated concept. And to make consent clear in any context requires a lot of conscious effort and communication. So therefore, I think one thing you have to do is make that conscious effort to communicate with your children. And also, of course, there are ways to prevent children from accessing things online. It seems like every other day there's a new important news story that affects the work I'm trying to do in this book. For example, recently the Prime Minister of Great Britain proposed that all internet services that go into all the homes in Great Britain should come with a default option of screening out pornography. And that's to prevent mainly children from accessing it. And that's controversial, of course, because any restriction on freedom of expression is controversial. But because the problems are pretty widely recognized now, even Prime Minister of Great Britain is trying to find ways to keep children away from this sort of material. So it's a challenge, but I don't think it's necessarily impossible. And I think it's important to not have them exposed to it when they are still of an age where they can't really consent to become users of pornography. It's a kind of abuse, I think, to let children who can't consent as adults to be exposed to that kind of material.
Absolutely. But it's really hard because there's so many new apps that are constantly out there that they can download in an instant on their iPhone.
Hey, I'm just glad I'm not a parent. I don't have all the answers to technologically how you can restrict your children's access. I know that it's very difficult to do. But I think that, you know, people all the way up to the Prime Minister of Great Britain are trying to think of ways. And I think more thinking needs to get done about how to solve that problem you're bringing up.
How can you make parents aware of the dangers? How are you trying to kind of champion that cause, maybe, of making parents aware that it is prevalent and it is out there and that you've been studying it?
Well, I guess the main way I'm trying to do that is by writing the book to start with, by giving this talk at TEDx Jackson Hole on Saturday. And also before that, this Thursday evening, I'm speaking at a local school. That lecture is open to the public as well, not just parents and students of that school. So those are the ways I'm trying to get the word out there.
Do you think maybe parents just aren't aware of how prevalent it is? Because I'm a parent, and I didn't know what it meant, what internet trolling was.
I think a lot of parents are not so aware of what is going on the internet because, you know, the generation of parents of teenage children didn't really grow up with the internet in the same way. So I do think a lot of parents are not fully aware. And then, of course, even more recently than the prevalence of the internet is, as you were mentioning, everyone has a smartphone now, and all the apps on these smartphones can access material even more quickly and easily and privately than the internet on a computer can do. So, yeah, I think a lot of parents aren't fully aware. I also think a lot of parents, you know, I'm not a parent, so I don't really want to speak for parents, but I think it's possible that a lot of parents also kind of don't want to be fully aware because it's such a hard problem and they don't really know what to do about it. And they just sort of are hoping for the best. But then I also think some parents at least are somewhat aware, but they just, again, it seems like such a big, overwhelming problem, I think, for a lot of people. And your questions seem to indicate that feeling as well. That's actually one thing I'm trying to speak to in my TED Talk on Saturday, trying to provide people with maybe a feeling that they have a little bit more control or a little bit more tools to address the problem. But as for my approach is more about, you know, people just being aware and thinking through, being aware and then thinking through how they want to address it. The technological answers are beyond me, I'm afraid.
Do you think women's roles, not just in this country, but around the world, has it gotten better for women in terms of, you know, being preyed upon?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by being preyed upon, but I do think that in general, in my lifetime, I think that the situation of women, certainly in the developed world, I can't really talk beyond that, has improved. I think the feminist movement has been somewhat successful. I actually think that's part of the reason that there's been such an explosion of pornography. It's not just that the internet makes it easier to distribute pornography. I think it's also that it's a kind of backlash against the successes that the feminist movement has achieved so far. I don't think we've achieved full equality in terms of economic advantages or social advantages or anything else, but or parenting roles or any of those things. But I do think we've achieved a lot of progress, and that not only the prevalence of pornography on the internet, but also this phenomenon I was calling porn culture, of how you know, young kids, for example. In the article that was published by Nancy Jo Sales in Vanity Fair, documents a lot of ways in which there is very little sexual equality between boys and girls who are coming of age right now. And that's the result of porn culture, which I do see as a backlash against the progress that the feminist movement has made.
Oh, really? That's very, very interesting. I guess I haven't thought about it like that in those terms. But I was hoping you were going to say that around the world, you know, rape and things of that nature has gone down.
No, if anything, it's gotten worse. Around the world, I know for sure. There are these huge rape scandals going on in India in the past few months. Also, I mean, rape is a daily weapon of war in Africa and other places too. It's hard for me to say because I haven't done the kind of sociological studies that would be required, and I'm not sure anyone has. But so it's hard for me to say whether rape has actually increased or whether it's just, again, partly a product of some success of the feminist movement that we now report it more, we recognize it more, we are more outraged by it. So it's hard to say whether it's just the same as ever, but there's more concern about it and more reporting of it, or whether it's actually gotten worse. But it certainly hasn't gotten better, certainly not around the world, and not even in this country. Actually, I think rape, for example, there was the huge scandal in Steubenville in Ohio over high school students committing rape and not even realizing that's what they were doing. Because another phrase that gets used a lot in journalism besides porn culture is rape culture, meaning that we think the way porn describes sex is so normal that that seeps into our whole culture. We think rape is so normal, or what I would call sex without clear consent is so normal that we don't even recognize it as rape anymore, or at least a lot of people don't, especially young people. So there are things going on, of which the Steubenville scandal was just one good example. Even more recently than that, just in the last couple of months, there's been more than one scandals in Canadian colleges where it's been discovered, it's been going on for a while. Again, I think it's more about awareness than anything else. It's been going on for at least this millennium, like the last decade, that freshman students are welcomed at more than one college in this kind of orientation process with these chants about how we like freshman girls who don't consent and we want to grab their asses and so forth. But non-consent is emphasized in these chants. And this is how incoming freshmen are oriented to their new school. And it's only coming to light now, but it's been going on for a while. So yeah, even in the developed world, in the Americas, this is a big problem. It's not getting better.
So interesting, April. What is your take on child pornography? What do you know about that?
Well, I don't know anything about it in the sense that I haven't actually viewed any child pornography, where I have viewed quite a bit of what's thought of as mainstream pornography with adults. But in the process of thinking about how to define pornography, it's usually pretty ill-defined, so I had to come up with a definition. And the core of my definition is it's a sexually explicit representation that circulates, usually by being bought and sold or given away, and that eroticizes use and non-consent. And that last bit is what made me come to an important realization about child pornography, because to me it's kind of mysterious. Everybody deplores child pornography. It's the only kind of pornography that's actually illegal in the United States. And yet there are really a lot of users of child pornography worldwide. It's not just a few sickos in their dark alleys. You know, there's a really large clientele for child pornography. And so then you have to ask yourself, well, is a huge portion of the population just mentally ill? But no, I don't think that's the answer. I think my definition of pornography as eroticizing use and non-consent kind of explains that mystery, because if you think of porn as that which eroticizes use and non-consent, and then you realize that a child is by definition the person who cannot give consent to a sexual activity, then suddenly, instead of looking like it's in the murky margins of the pornography enterprise, it's really right at the heart of what pornography is about. If pornography is about making non-consent sexy, what could be sexier than the person who can't consent? So that's my take on why child pornography is more appealing to more people than most people imagine it might be.
Right. More than we realize.
Yeah.
Wow. Sad. It's really exciting that you're focused on this and you have this cause, so to speak, to really inform people, because I, for one, feel very uninformed.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you're doing this TED Talk, it's led me to do some research just on what you're when you're talking about. So I hope you can talk to as many parents as possible.
Well, I hope so, too, and that's why I'm visiting the school on Thursday evening. And it just warms the cockles of my heart to hear that my work has inspired you to do a little bit more research, because that is my mm-hmm. whole goal, just to raise awareness of what's really going on. Because the problem is that it's not even so much that pornography itself is a problem. The problem is that the way pornography, especially as it's developed through the internet, which I think is even more demeaning of women than a lot of porn used to be, that has become, the pervasiveness of it has made it seem normal to people, has made looking at sex that way seem normal. And so what I'm trying to do is say, wait a minute, this is not normal. This is not the only way to represent sex. This is not the only way to think about sex. A lot of people feel like, including feminists, feel like, well, we don't want people to associate feminism with hating sex or censorship or prudishness. We're feminists who like sex. But my point is that you can like sex and not necessarily like pornography, you know, and especially not necessarily like porn culture or rape culture. So that's one of the most important messages I'm trying to get out there.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate your work. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. I really appreciate it.
This is The Mountain Muse, and I'm Emmy DeGrappa.